Everyone has a story. Everyone travels a road. Some of those roads are paved, some are gravel, some are a combination. Some are superhighways. Some of us have met with sharp turns, intersections, and delays. We travel at different speeds to different destinations. On this podcast, we talk about your road to now.
Welcome to Your Road to Now. Today I sit down with Doug Gilchrist, City Manager for the City of Kelowna. Welcome, Doug.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Afternoon.
Maybe if you could start off, Doug, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Just kind of give us your elevator pitch if you're just to meet somebody someday. Or
Born and bred, BC boy, love the outdoors and everything on the West Coast. And hopefully this is where I spend the rest of my days, somewhere out here. I grew up in northern BC in Kitimat, small town, 10,000 people.
A little bit of snow.
A little bit of snow. It's actually, that's what Kitimat means, Valley of the Snow.
Yeah, didn't they get like 10 feet of snow and stuff like that sometimes?
They get an incredible amount of snow. When I remember as a kid, we had a house with a carport, and it would be enclosed in the middle of the winter.
And we'd like igloos everywhere.
And we would snow blow the roof off in the high seasons, where you can't see the telephone poles.
So you're a skier then, I tell you?
Yeah, I ski a lot. Still spend a lot of time at Big White, you know, nice 45 minutes from our door and take the kids up there.
So how long did you spend in Kitimat? Like you were born there and then?
Yeah, I was born in Kitimat and spent my youth there. Left just after high school, like a lot of people do in small town BC. And moved to the Lower Mainland.
And went to university there? Or?
I lived in Squamish for a few years. The kiteboarding capital of Western Canada. Lived there for a little while, and then West Vancouver, and went to school at UBC and Douglas College.
Nice. So were you kind of the athlete then? Like you're saying, you did some kiteboarding, and what, did you do some stuff in high school too? Or
yeah, growing up in a small town in northern BC, you kind of play sports or get in trouble, and I played sports. So yeah, and everything from water skiing as soon as the ice went off the lake, to snow skiing, lacrosse, hockey, basketball, volleyball. Golf, the full gamut.
So, great outdoors in Kitimat. You still kind of have that love for the outdoors, or?
You bet. Yeah, it changes as we all get a little older, and what your adventures are change a bit. But love of the water. Kitimat is on the ocean and on a big river as well. So, a little bit of fishing, a lot of boating, and to this day, I still spend a lot of time on the water, either paddling, or boating, or down at the coast even.
You can take the boy out of Kitimat, but not the Kitimat out of the boy, right?
Yeah, my wife tries to beat the Kitimat. It's still left in me sometimes because it can be a bit rough up there. Yeah, but no, it's a great place, to grow up and a great place to be from, too. Like, I have really fond memories of my youth up there.
So how did you decide to leave? Like, I know some people end up, like, I grew up in Midway, too, and I decided that I was going to leave.
The big city.
The big city, yeah, it was metropolis, right? It's only about an hour and a half from here, depending how fast you drive, I guess.
But yeah, with your fast cars.
That's right, so over the top there. But did you just kind of happen to leave, or did you always want to leave when you were in high school?
It's in a town like that, it's a topic of discussion as you get towards the end of high school. Who's going to stay and work in the plant or the mill? Or
the life or talk, right? Yeah. I'm sure you had that same
thing. Or who's going to go to university? And if you're going to go, where are you going to go? So mine was a little bit different in that my whole family left. My parents kind of made a plan to leave when I finished high school. My brother had left a few years earlier. He was a hockey player, played junior hockey around BC and actually in the eastern U.S. So he was already kind of fled the nest. And then when I was getting close to graduation, they decided it was time to look around. And my dad happened to find a career move for himself to run a pulp mill in Squamish. And so
he was in the lumber industry up in Kitimat too?
Yeah, he was in pulp and paper his whole life and finished his career actually in Indonesia in the pulp and paper industry, running a big pulp and paper company.
I'm a big fan of the resource sector, so I think we need to do more to promote that stuff because I think a lot of us have roots back to the resource sector, and I think that's what built our country, like resources, mining, logging, all that kind of stuff. Just got to do it responsibly, but a lot of us owe our kind of like our legacy to that stuff. So
certainly, you know, it served me and my family well, and a lot of the people that I know that lived and grew up in the north, it served them well too. I think we do have a responsibilities, you say, to do it differently now. And I think the technology is there to do it differently. Whether or not some of those industries can come back in a sustainable way or not, I don't know.
But I think if it, you know, like the technology comes in, I look at the mining stuff a lot, and the technology seems to be improving, like the way that they find what they're looking for and the way that they can manage this stuff. I think if we can combine all that great technology we're kind of developing along with the resources, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, and there are great examples around the world to follow when you think of forestry industries that are going on in Finland and Sweden and places like that where it is done extremely sustainably with high levels of technology being utilized. You know, those are the models we need to replicate if we're going to revive that industry here.
So when you left, you went to Vancouver, you started your education. Was like working for a municipality kind of in the dream, or is this kind of like, what was the next step? Like, how did you make that choice to all of a sudden, you know,
when I grew
take
up,
the course that you were doing, right?
When I grew up, I want to be a public servant. No, I don't think I ever breathed those words. In fact, in a couple of positions I've taken over the years, one of the things I often say, or I say in the interviews, is I'm kind of an entrepreneur in bureaucrat's clothing. Which could be I have a bad suit, but really, I don't. I try and break the mold of what people stereotypically think of as a public servant or a bureaucrat, if you will. So I don't really see that mold in myself at all, and I think I bring that to the table in my work. So no, that was never really an intention. You know, when I'm mentoring or advising some of my staff or friends, I often say you'll kind of fall to what you're good at, or you'll be attracted to what you're good at, whether that's a sport or a career path or whatever that might be. Is you'll go towards what you're good at, and I just happen to be, I guess, one of my skills or be what I'm good at is getting things done in a government environment. So taking things that can be complex or bureaucratic and trying to simplify them. So I've now worked actually in all three or four levels of government, including First Nation government. So federal, provincial, municipal, and First Nation government. So I guess that's my calling.
So was it straight out of school then into a government position?
It was, yeah. I actually worked in a place far less creative than the government in the banking industry, very briefly. But when I graduated from Douglas College in UBC, I went into appraisal work in real estate and worked for BC Assessment for a spell, doing some really interesting work in Whistler and the Sunshine Coast. And then went to the federal government and worked for the Department of Indian Affairs for almost 5 years, I think. And again, learned a ton about our province and about our people and history, and had some really good experiences doing fantastic real estate deals in that world, in that environment. Until I decided to come up here.
So why Kelowna? Was it just the opportunity that, or was Kelowna kind of a draw? Like how did you decide that you wanted to come here?
Interestingly, I came to Kelowna, the Okanagan actually, Woods Lake, Sam's Resort on Woods Lake.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have been there.
When I was a kid, my dad and mom would pack up the station wagon, like the Clampets, and put the boat on the roof. And we'd drive from Kitimat to Woods Lake, and we'd spend our 2-3 weeks of summer here, and always loved it. Flintstones, go-karts, and all those things.
Those things are gone. It's kind of weird. Yeah. Like all that stuff that used to be here on the west side too, there was the water slides, there was Old McDonald's Farm.
Yeah.
There's none of that left here. I don't know how they made money then, because it's pretty tough to make it now.
Yeah.
But all that stuff that was around when we were younger, it's gone, and it was a big draw for this valley.
Yeah. So I had a lot of fun as a kid and fond memories coming here year after year, and I think it always stuck in my head that was a really cool place to be, and I wanted to come back in some form or fashion. And then it came full circle when actually between working for the government and graduating from high school, a few friends and I thought, hey, you know, we should go to Kelowna. That might be a good place to hang our hats. And we came out for a few weekends and had a lot of fun. And I don't know, it's always been a place that I wanted to come back to. So eventually I made the turn and came up.
I wonder how many people actually do that from camping, because we did the same thing. We were down on, I think it was the Hiawatha RV park. We spent, when our kids were really young, we spent a week there, And as we were there, we're just like, you know, this is a great place. We got to move here. And we were in Edmonton. So Edmonton had like two seasons, and it was winter and July.
Yeah.
So we thought, wow, we could get a lot more summer out of here. And I mean, Kelowna is so beautiful, right? Like, and the fresh fruit is a big attraction and everything like that. So
it absolutely is. It has it all. It's, I think it has an amazing future.
Yeah, no, it's, I always say it's a small town, a big city amenities. It's kind of like spectacular in that way. And I mean, if again, I'll say this, I think people are getting tired of this, but I think Canada is one of the best countries in the world. And I know Jean Chrétien said we need more Canadas around the globe.
Yeah.
And with our social safety net and the way that, you know, we kind of, you know, it's a great melting pot. And I think if I had to pick a province in Canada, I'd pick BC for its rugged, raw beauty. And then if I had to pick a spot in British Columbia, it'd be Vancouver, Victoria, or Kelowna. And I think Kelowna's like, you know, depending on what you like for a lifestyle, if you don't like commuting, Kelowna's the place to be, right? And then, you know, some people get isolated or feel like isolated in Victoria. So you got to kind of want to stay in Victoria, I think, because mm-hmm. that ferry would drive you crazy after a while. But I think Kelowna's like, I think the secret's out, though. We're seeing a lot more. So what is the, like, what do you think of Kelowna, like, say, in 40 years? What are we looking at for a population? You're the guy that has all the numbers.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, some of my staff have the numbers in more detail, and they probably won't want me to speak to them. But, I think I'm with you that Kelowna has a great future, and it is one of the best places in Canada, I believe, to live, to raise a family, to grow a business, to do a lot of fantastic things. Kind of philosophically, I think the future of mid-sized cities is something that is just emerging. You know, Richard Florida, kind of an urbanist philosophy fellow, spent quite a bit of time talking about the future of mega cities and the global urbanization to big cities. And I actually had a chance to have a chat with him down in Phoenix a couple of years ago and challenge him on that idea that maybe the future is in mid-sized cities, because we're seeing a lot of migration out of those big cities and people wanting a little bit more of that kind of traditional environment that's smaller, more cozy, you know your neighbor, yet you still have, as you say, the amenities if you want them, you know, to grow a business and things like that. So I think we fit the bill on so many fronts. We're seeing people migrate here from places we haven't seen them come before. You know, people come up here from California and say, "Do you know what kind of a jewel you have here?" And we say, "Yeah, don't tell anybody."
That's right.
Yeah. But at the same time, that is that's going to be really, really helpful for attracting talent, which I think will be one of our big challenges down the road is as we go through these major demographic shifts and the need for in-migration and things like that, that we're going to have to use what we have that's special to attract the talent that we need.
So you showed up in Kelowna. Were you married at the time, or did that happen after? Or?
No. When people ask me why I came to Kelowna, sometimes the answer is, well, I came for a girl and a job, and the job worked out, and the girl didn't. But now that I'm happily married, I'd have to say that, you know, that was a blessing as well, that it worked out with a different girl.
Right. So the first job here then? What was that? What was the title of that first job?
I actually came up here to work for the fellow who was running the real estate department. It was about four people at the time. And very shortly after I arrived, he told me that I was here to take his job, that he wasn't sticking around. I learned a great deal from
him. So that was an opportunity for sure?
Absolutely. I learned a great deal from him, and I still credit him for bringing me into the city 16 years ago now. And from there, I had an opportunity to grow that real estate function and do some really, really interesting projects as a result of it.
I say that to a lot of people. Like, you know, lots of people say, there's no opportunity. I said, you just need to be ready for the opportunity, right? If you're prepared for the opportunities will show up always. If you're not ready for the opportunity, then somebody else is probably going to take it. So it looks like you've been ready for most of the opportunities that showed up.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I don't want to be seen as an opportunist, but certainly when they're there, you have to take hold of them and run with them. And I think more importantly, recognize when they're there.
That's right.
And because they will be subtle, right? Yeah, sometimes they're very subtle and the opportunities look slim, but you got to go after it.
I'm not going to go through your whole work history, but you have the top dog job, I guess, you know, the big responsibility for sure, city manager. That's the guy that kind of reports to the council and kind of has the final say in stuff. And you took that position over, was it, you're about 2 years in or close to 2 years?
Just about 2 years in June.
Yeah. So how's that going?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of a better job in the industry I'm in. This is I can't think of a better city to do it in with a better council, with a better staff. And that may sound a bit cliche, but I am actually really proud of the work that we do. And the people that we are bringing into the organization, the level of talent that we're beginning to attract, I think is going to serve us really well. And I'm having a ton of fun. It's just a really, really interesting job. Day to day is different. Year to year is different. And in a place that is this attractive and is growing at a pace like we are, I can't think of a better place to do it. It's an opportunity that I'm thankful for every day. And I really relish it. Like, I think we're going to, like, sometimes I just want to push fast forward and see how it all works, see how it all works out.
Be patient.
Right? Because I think in the 16 years I've been here, I love driving around the city and looking at some of the projects that I've been able to be a part of, and some of the things that my peers and community members have yeah. created. It's pretty cool stuff.
I think the three big things that stick out for me, and I've been here about 20 years now, and I think the three big things that really affect Kelowna is one, the connector, and two, the UBCO, and then the YLW. I think those are big contributors to our overall economy. I may be missing something, but...
The hospital. Regional
yeah.
hospital.
So, yeah, for sure. There you go. I got four now. But we look over the landscape right now, like we're looking from the top of, well, the 16th floor of Landmark, and we can see a lot of growth in the city, and it looks amazing. Like, downtown's kind of growing up, which is actually what's happening. It's densifying, which is kind of what most cities want to do, is densify.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing some development, you know, down along the lakefront there too. And there's a lot of lakefront. I know sometimes I'm not going to get you into any politics or whatever, but I mean, lots of times people are, you know, worried about up as opposed to taking away views. But I say, you know, step 2 feet to the left and you can see everything you need to see, right? So, but I think, you know, Kelowna has some breathtaking viewpoints, and, you know, people will brag sometimes, oh, the view from Knox is amazing. I said, well, you need to go look over there, and then from Mission Hill, and then look over from Okanagan Mountain Park. And I think just there's blue grouse. There's so many amazing views in Kelowna. I don't think there's a best view. There's just a different view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. And this one's really good, by the way.
Yeah.
I never complain about my office, for sure. But it is an interesting growth period for the city. And I think probably anybody who sat in my job in the last 20 years has said the same thing. But I believe we're at a bit of a precipice here, where we are becoming more sophisticated. The people that are coming out of Okanagan College and UBCO that are staying here now, that before had to leave to find work in some cases.
There's more opportunity for sure for young people, and that's great, because I know when I came here 20 years ago, my wife had a job. She was working in the bank, and she got transferred out here, and they're just like, oh, did your husband get a job? Because it's really tough for guys to get a job out here, right? And it was tough for guys to get a job, and really tough for young people to find a start. But I think there's enough businesses kind of coming into Kelowna that we need more of the youth to stay. And I think that's great with Okanagan College and UBCO kind of like feeding the workforce too. That's great. And this Landmark district is great too. It's a really good business district. I got to work in Toronto for a while down on Queen Street, which is, you know, as business as you get, and this is as business as you get too. And with Landmark 7 coming in, I think there'll be 5,000 people working here. So it's a great kind of, like, you know, hub. There's little hubs in Kelowna. Like, you got Orchard Park Mall for your shopping, you got your downtown core, and you know, like, there's a lot of pride in Rutland, and there's a lot of pride in the Mission and stuff like that, and, you know, different areas in West Kelowna and stuff. Like, we had Jason Zilke on, he's talking about the growth of West Kelowna. So I think there's a lot of pride in the whole city, I think. And then some people look at it differently, and I say, some people will say that's the bridge that divides us, and I say that's the bridge that connects us.
Absolutely.
So it depends how you look at it, right? So I think that's the cool thing about Kelowna.
Yeah, and I think the glasses half full perspective is nice to hear, because there really are some great things that are being done in our city, and it's not being done by government, or hopefully it's being done with government. In my role, I'm always really keeping a keen eye on perspective and how we're viewed by people. But when I look back at the community, if I were to look at it differently or reflect on it, some of the great things that are happening in this community are grassroots. They're community members that care, they're business owners that care, and they're really driving really interesting things that are happening, from arts and cultural to social to the education industry. The passion here is strong. And I think, you know, the two pillars of education that we've talked about, you know, those represent about nearly 20,000 students in Kelowna, and you know, that starts to drive a university town with a certain vibe and feel that attracts people. So I think it's a really exciting time with those two major educational institutions. And the hospital too is a going concern that's only going to grow.
Yeah, I grew up in Midway, like we were talking about earlier, and we used to go to Penticton. Penticton was the place to be. Like, everybody from Kelowna go to Penticton. The airport was in Penticton. Like, everything was, it was all about Penticton and the riots, of course, and they locked that city down. And then Kelowna kind of took advantage of that, and I think that's great. And mm-hmm. and Kelowna's never looked back. I think the only, you know, like, the thing, I think Penticton's got a great, like, lakefront on both sides. It got that kind of thing going with the, you know, open access to the beach on both sides of the lake. Well, they're in between two lakes, right? So
yeah, geographically, Penticton's beautiful. I remember Penticton as the hockey school city.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? If you went there, it was usually for a hockey school, especially from kids from the north who played hockey. That's where you got away for the summer to go down there.
Yeah, we got to work with that school for a while too, so that's awesome. Small world, actually. What do you see, like what do you want to see in Kelowna? Like, you've got two young children. What's important for you to them? For, like, what do you, like, is it the education? Is it more choices? Like, what do you need to see and what do you hope for them, I guess?
Yeah, you know, the city we have today is one that I could see for my kids. And, you know, we have our challenges. There's no question about
everybody
it. Whether
does,
it's
yeah.
social issues or safety or traffic or whatever it is that is somebody's particular issue. We have them. We know that. But I think collectively, they're solvable, you know, and I better believe that in my role, but I genuinely do. And I think for me, one of the things that I'm hopeful for is that there's more solutions achieved through partnerships. We have a lot of talent that often works in isolation or historically has worked in isolation in different industries, you know, institutions, government, what have you. And through partnerships, I think we can achieve a lot more than we have in the past. Higher utilization of some of our infrastructure that's out there. Schools is an example, and I know the school district and the city are talking a lot about how can we use each other's assets to the benefit of our citizens more. So I think, you know, partnerships would be a big thing that I'm hopeful for in the city to help achieve great things and solve some of our problems that are out there and make sure we have a good environment for, as you say, for our kids and grandchildren and that kind of thing.
Partnerships, yeah. Jason Zilke was talking about that too, how the city of West Kelowna is now using that a lot to develop some of their stuff too, partnerships. So I think that's great. And I think, you know, you've got youthful energy and so does he. And I think, you know, the city's lucky to have a guy like you that has some, you know, like, you can think from the business side, but also think from the social side. And I think we're all responsible for everybody out here. And I think we're lucky to have you. And I know sometimes it must be tough. I can imagine there's tougher days, right? When it seems like the whole world hates you. I bet when, you know, like when you guys do something and.
Yeah. I mean, certainly having my entire career in government, I have pretty thick skin. And for me, there's kind of two things. Always being able to look in the mirror and say, yeah, we're doing the right thing. It may not be popular. It's often not going to be popular. But if you're doing the right thing, then it's okay. Like, I can live with that. And the other part of it is, and I don't think this is, maybe this goes back to your comment about John Critchin, and for all the faults that we may have in government, federal, provincial, municipal, for all the faults that we have, the outcome is a good one. We have a great place to live. We have general safety. We have strong health care. We have good recreation. We have people who look after one another. We have a fantastic place to live, maybe the best in the world. So for all the fault in government, when you put it all together, it does work. And whether it's we move from a left to a right, and then we land back in the middle, and maybe those are checks and balances that we need in society to have the outcome that we have today.
Yeah, there's a bunch of studies out there that show we've never lived at a better time in our lives for the world's population. Like, we've solved quite a few, I shouldn't say the word solved, we've moved forward on a lot of issues, but we've never lived in a better time. But if you watch the news, it's never been worse, right? So you have to temper that, I guess, and look at what you're looking at. But I think overall, there's tons of opportunity. And I think even in technology, a lot of people are saying, well, I'm never going to catch up. But I think you don't need to catch up that much, because what was here today in 3 years is kind of different for everybody. So you just have to weigh in and just start, right? So
yeah, absolutely. There's lots of really interesting signals that remind you where we are in sort of our evolution. And one light bulb that went on for me the other day was I asked my daughter, we went to her parent-teacher interview, and I asked her how writing was going. And she said, Dad, we don't have writing. And I thought, you're kidding me. And she said, no, we did cursive writing when I was in the French school, but we don't have cursive writing anymore.
Oh, I thought, didn't even know that myself.
Yeah, I thought, what? That is a signal of where we are today. In, you know,
it's
in our
called sort
of
Google, Dad.
Evolution, that's right. Yeah, I didn't ask where the encyclopedia was. I knew that answer.
Oh, we did everything with Google. We don't need anything.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. At least, you know, I think they're starting to bring some. I've been in some of the schools here recently where they have a lot of technology in them. So I think we need to invest in our youth for sure. Is there something that scares you in the future, and not necessarily in Kelowna, like in the world itself? Is there something that's you know, that makes you kind of like restless sometimes?
Decorum, probably.
Yeah.
You know, not to get into politics a whole lot, but I think just discourse, respect, you know, decorum, the kind of conversations that happen out there, and not to be too critical of social media, because I think it has some great upsides as well, the ability to reach people, the ability to people have a voice. But there's also a downside to it, where there's a lack of accountability that comes with it. And how far people can, or how many people can be reached, often with misinformation or misdirection. So that does make me nervous sometimes, or a little worried about public conversation. And I'm hoping that it makes a turn to be more positive, and not through regulation, but through just human behavior, that we start to check each other, and it makes a bit of a more positive turn.
I think that's kind of like key for lots of people. And I think one of the things that we become is really intolerant. We have to learn tolerance for sure, and accepting other people and other points of view. Tolerance is key. And I think social media has kind of done a, people look at social media sometimes, they look at the Instagram photos and something, and they see somebody having like a boat or a car or something like that, and they want it, but they don't see behind the wall. They don't see what's behind that, you know, that Instagram photo where people are just like loving life, working 4 hours a week, and you know, like here on the beach. They don't see the, you know, like the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, which may or not be true, but also, you know, like fighting over car payments and stuff like that. So behind the wall, and people want to judge so fast on everything, and they want to have the short answer. And I say to most people, just like, listen, for a while, right, before you weigh in and think you know the answer, right? Because there's people out there that have been doing this. We've been doing this for a while, that probably have more knowledge than we do. You know what I mean? So that's to come, you know, be the armchair quarterback. Everybody likes armchair quarterbacking, I guess. But
yeah.
To learn to be tolerant at the same time would be better, though. You know, provide your suggestions, show where you're suffering and pain, and maybe write it, you know, like a, write your position, but then, and then let, you know, the wheels do the work, right? And I think in most everything, everybody has, in my belief, everybody has equal rights. Nobody has special rights, because if you take away rights from somebody, or give extra rights to somebody, you're obviously taking away from somebody else. So if we become tolerant and not worried about what somebody else is doing so much, I think it'll become a better world. And I think the bigger thing is people need to start to stand up for the people that are getting picked on too, because usually people are just like, I ain't taking a piece of that, right? So they'll watch like a social media post where somebody will attack somebody, and they're just like, I don't want none of that. And then that person feels isolated and scared to talk again or whatever, or reluctant to share their point of view. So that's why I don't go to any of those forums, and I don't, and that's why with Kelowna Now has never put forums on the website and that, because those ones are very, you can have, you know, it's been shown, I've seen it in lawsuits where there's, you know, like one guy has 25 aliases or 100 aliases and they pick on somebody, and it seems like the whole world's ganging up on you, but it's one person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very easy to manipulate. I mean, there's an upside that everybody has a voice in a platform, which we know generations have been looking for, and this is that they found it. But it also creates, I think, an opportunity for a lot of misinformation and manipulation.
Especially if you have money sometimes, right? When you're pushing agendas and stuff like that. And we've seen the effect, and we've heard about the effect in the U.S. and stuff in elections. And
there's no question that that occurs. And I think it really doesn't give much of an opportunity for understanding and education. You know, when it's how much can you learn from a tweet or from a, you know, a two-liner? You're missing everything in between the conversations with people. You know, sitting on the couch next to them and having a conversation or a healthy debate about it is lost in social media. And I don't know. It's just, to me, that can be a concerning thing for the future.
What excites you? What's getting you up in the morning and go like, man, I got to get it today. Like, what's like driving you right now? Like, what do you see out there that just like, wow, this is exciting?
I mean, I'm really excited about our city. There's no question about the trajectory we're on. I'm really excited about it. The projects that come in the door, private sector, public sector, from staff, what have you, that gets me pumped up. I think we're in a great path. I'm really excited to help do what I can to help facilitate that. But generally speaking, the talent of our youth. I sat down with a PhD graduate on Tuesday from UBC, a fellow from Turkey originally, via Iran to here. And the knowledge that, and education that he has is just staggering. Things that were difficult to actually contemplate and understand, which is commonplace, I think, nowadays with some of the youth that's coming out of some of our schools. The talent is awesome, and we're going to need it.
We need people. Yeah, Canada needs people.
Data analysts, like people that are just really concerned about the future, but also have the talent to change it. Yeah, I'm really excited about that, and I think we're in a good place.
Awesome. We'll end this with a little bit of quick fire, kind of how okay. I always end it. So it'll just, you don't have to have like a favorite place, but I typically ask where you like to dine. What's your favorite place in Kelowna?
Oh, to dine. I'll give you a few.
Sure, you can pick one with the kids and one without
the
kids.
Yeah, Home Block is one of my new favorites.
Oh, yeah. Is that the winery you're talking about, Cedar Creek?
Yeah.
I've been there a few times. Love it.
Fantastic.
Love
They've
it.
Done a great
the
job.
The view, the ambiance, everything. They're great.
World class. Probably one of my older favorites is Quail's Gate.
So we were going to go to Home Block yesterday, and they closed at 8, so we ended up at Quail's Gate.
Oh, there you go.
Been to Quail's Gate a few times. Love Quail's Gate for sure. Yeah. And the wine is great, too.
Yeah, and kind of downtown Kelowna, certainly Bouchon's is awesome.
I've never been to Bouchon's.
Great food.
I've got to go once or twice or three times.
Great food and great people, good service.
Yeah. Pizza? Eat pizza?
Not a ton.
Yeah. Hamburgers, cheeseburgers? Or are you doing this plant-based thing now?
No, I am not. I told you I grew up in Kitimat. I'm not. But we try and eat healthy, and when we go out, we try and treat ourselves a little bit.
Best patio in town to go to enjoy a cold whatever you're drinking?
Oh, best patio. I still like the El Dorado.
Yeah, that's beautiful for sure. Smack dab, El Dorado, all that stuff is great.
Yeah.
Wine, you partake?
I do.
Favorite?
Burrowing Owl. Yeah. Syrah, probably. It changes from time to time.
South, was it?
Oliver,
it's quite a bit south. Yeah, there's some amazing wineries as you go down. Like, that's what we live in, this amazing place, right? So crazy what you know, you don't know everything, but yeah, that's why I ask these questions. I figure I'm gonna find a place I can go next.
Yeah, that's right. I actually had a friend who he spoiled me one year, but I think he actually ruined me. I lent him my trailer for a week or two, as he had some guests, and so he borrowed my trailer, and then he wanted to pay me. I said, no, you're not gonna pay me for borrowing my trailer. I opened the trailer door and he had a case of really nice wines. So we got to drink that over the course of the summer, and he completely spoiled us with, now we can only drink nice wine.
That's awesome. Yeah. Favorite activity in Kelowna?
Anything on the water.
Yeah.
Paddling, water skiing, you name it. Yeah.
Is there like when you have friends or family coming to town, is there something that you have to do with them? Is there like, hey, we got to do this or...
Depending on who it is, but I do try and get people out biking here. So I have a lot of friends from North Vancouver, where I spend a lot of time, in West Vancouver, that are mountain bikers. And it's kind of a little known gem out here, being able to mountain bike. One of my favorites is, if they're up for it, is we ride from the end of Lakeshore to Commando Bay, about halfway to Naramata. And then get somebody to pick us up in the boat and bike home, or boat home. It's just
That'd be sweet,
it's just such a memorable experience for people who like to mountain bike.
In my pitch, I'm going to pitch here, and and if it happens, you got to name it after me.
Jim Park.
That's right. Tugboat Bay.
Yes.
All the way down to the El Dorado along the waterfront.
Yes.
Which is going to be tough to do, but all the way along. Connect to at the El Dorado to Mission Creek Greenway.
Yes.
All the way along the Greenway, up until Rutland, until I think Zipprick. Cut across Zipprick. Gonna have to build a bike trail there.
Yeah.
And then down along Costco, and then tie into the rail trail.
You've been looking at our OCP, Jim.
Is that actually in there? Because that's amazing.
It is just about all. All of it is just about in there. Now, some of that waterfront's going to be very difficult to achieve.
No,
but
for sure. That's a seawall for us, right? Like, I mean, that's amazing. That'd be great. Like, if that was all one piece and we could ride that or bike that or run that and not really have, and if we had crossings where we needed to, then we never had to actually wait for traffic or anything, that would be, like, spectacular. Yeah. That's actually in there?
And those are, it is. It's very close to that, at least, anyway. But those are the, when I talk about excited about our future, it's and things that I want to push fast forward on, it's those types of things. Yeah. Years ago, my predecessor, he had a meeting with some federal MLAs talking about connecting the U.S. with the Trans-Canada Trail through Kelowna. And ever since then, we've been connecting pieces of that. The CN Rail Corridor, and they've done similar beyond Coldstream into Enderby. They've now got that piece together. So there are these incredible world, what will be one day world-class pathways and corridors and experiences here. But they're going to take a while to put into place, and we want to see them happen today. Our waterfront's another one.
Because that would be amazing, and I know that's a tough slug for sure, but if you think about it, probably 60% of it's already sitting there. Mm-hmm. It's accessible already, so it's not that big of a dream. I mean, you just have to convince the people that, you know, that let it happen too. That'd be great, and share that vision. And I guess, you know, that's awesome that it's actually in the works. The other one is, I know that there's been some stories out there. I think the Vancouver to San Francisco, kind of a bullet train kind of thing, which would be kind of cool. Wouldn't it be kind of cool to tie Vancouver, Calgary, and Kelowna, like tie those together in a bullet train? Wouldn't that just be amazing?
That will be well beyond my lifetime when we see something like that. But certainly, you know, those are the kind of, you know, I say this affectionately, it's the dreamers like that really do make change. Yeah. You know, somebody said that about connecting West Kelowna and Kelowna back in the 50s or whenever the first bridge was built, right? So on a smaller scale, the things like connecting our downtown UBC and the airport with some alternative transportation that is sustainable and uses today's or tomorrow's technology to make happen. Those are the smaller scale things that I think are actually quite achievable in our lifetime that excite me.
Yeah, some, you know, the autonomous cars, which some people are saying are 5 years away, 10 years away, or whatever that number is, the current road systems would be more than adequate for autonomous cars, apparently, because they'd move the cars a lot faster, and, you know, because there's no hesitation at lights, and they move a ton more traffic if all the cars are autonomous. But, I mean, that's a ways out there too, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think the future of autonomous vehicles is now. It's how quickly we're willing to accept it.
They need all to be autonomous for it to actually work. So,
that's certainly
can't
helpful.
Have one guy in the middle that's lane there, helpful. Right? Just like tying everything up.
But I think we sometimes don't see how quickly things like that are moving. You know, I was on Harbor Air flying to the island a few weeks ago, and you know, it kind of flew under the radar that is going to be the first all-electric airplane. Company in the world, Floatplane, and they're going to do it. They've tested their first electric plane, and it went off without a hitch. And they have plans to electrify their entire fleet. I mean, that kind of evolution in transportation hasn't been seen for years and years and years.
Yeah, we're seeing an acceleration of adoption on everything, right? You know, if you go back through history, you'll see that, you know, the Industrial Revolution, it took so long to get certain things, but now we're seeing concept to creation so fast, especially with 3D printers and that kind of stuff. So stuff comes to market, like including Elon Musk's Cybertruck, right? That I put my name down for.
Yeah. Right? Once I get that window fixed, right?
That's right. That was the best marketing ever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, I think you're right. I spent some time with some very fast-paced tech folks at Accelerate Okanagan. And I'm amazed sometimes when I'm having conversations with them. I remember one fellow who was at the pitch-off last year. And he started out part of his conversation, you know, I've been around a while compared to some of these other folks. I've been at this for 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah. Like his company was old, right?
He's ready to flip it, right? Yeah. His next thing, he wanted to be a serial entrepreneur,
it's
right?
Time for him to move on. But yeah, you're right. The pace of adoption and bringing things to market is incredible.
Well, I thank you for your time today. It's been great sharing your road to now, and we'll catch up again. Again, thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Jim. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the chat.
Bye now.
Okay. If you'd like to be part of this podcast, we'd love to share your story and your road to now.